This is Ozarks at Large. Social media, digital platforms, and the web have altered virtually everything, commerce, communication, and media included. Clint Schneckloth is the lead pastor at Good Shepherd Lutheran Church in Fayetteville. You can find him other places besides the church, on Facebook, at his blog, on Twitter, or in the virtual world Second Life. He's written a new book about how new media and faith intersect called Mediating Faith, Faith Formation in a Transmedia Era. He'll discuss the book Saturday night at 6 at Nightbird Books in Fayetteville. In the first pages of the book, he describes a spiritual experience involving prayer. It's only after the description that he reveals the prayer took place in a virtual world. Pastor Clint Schneckloth recently talked to Ozarks at Large's Kyle Kellums about the book.
I can also call a group of people, although we don't typically do this in my church because it's not a habit of Lutherans to pray the daily offices per se. I could call up a group of people from my church and say, let's start doing Compline, like what I describe in the book that I pray on Second Life, and we could do it in real body. You know, we could get together at the church and do it. But for whatever reason, that technology, which is more of like a procedural community way of mediating faith, has fallen by the wayside. People don't want to go out of the house in the evening, or that's not what they want to leave the house in the evening to go do. But I can get on Second Life, as what you brought up from the book. And there are people in these digitally mediated contexts who share a common value. They want to pray together. And you can do it in a really kind of realistic way. You know, it's on a laptop screen and headphones in. Mm-hmm. But the experience is often really close to what you'd experience going to a Compline service at a church.
And no less spiritual for some.
No, and actually more spiritual for some. When I first started exploring Second Life especially, I first actually learned of it. I think I remember it coming out or rolling out at one point. Lyndon, the guy who developed Second Life, is kind of this relatively famous video game developer. And I remember when it rolled out, but what really first awakened me to it is I read this little book by Douglas Estes called Sim Church. And he explored Second Life, and what he found was that the people who really their lives were changed by Second Life were people for whom coming in real body was some kind of barrier to church. Examples would be like somebody who has Tourette's. Or social anxiety, or is handicapped and can't get to the building, or is excluded from real body worship for some way or for some reason. And so then they go to Second Life and they can bracket out those things that might be disruptive of worship, like Tourette's, you know, could be disruptive, or they might feel it's going to be disruptive of a community that they would gather with, or if they're a really strong example in Second Life is you're a gay youth in a rural small town somewhere out west, and you can't go to your church because they kicked you out, but you can go on Second Life.
You still have strong faith.
Yeah. So you can get on Second Life and you can find a community of people who's affirming and welcoming of you and that you can gather together with and pray together with. And so when you go to some of these places, you'll find you don't always know whether people are dealing with those things because they'll take on another avatar in Second Life. And so you don't know necessarily if they're blind or deaf or whatever. But the way that Second Life works is it allows for different ways of participating. So you can participate exclusively through moving your avatar around and typing. So like if you can't hear, then you don't have to worry about the audio side of things. But there's also a way to turn on, like, you know, your microphone and speak audio with people. And other people do that but won't type because they're physically unable to do that. And that's only one percentage of the community. It's not obviously everybody that's on there that is.
Sure. Well, you use the word avatar, and for some people that – boy, they don't want to talk about that because that's getting away from real life, and that's now you've limited your real social interaction. But you point out, we kind of all have our own avatars, even when we're looking at each other face to face.
Absolutely, you and I both decided what clothes to put on to wear to this conversation right now,
right.
And if we would have shown up with certain kinds of clothes, we would have had really different, you know, perceptions of each other.
I did not expect you to be in a zoot suit.
Right.
That would have, which he is not, ladies and gentlemen, but that would have completely altered. Right?
Absolutely. And I think we do forget, and perhaps that's one of the things that Second Life or these other avatar-type contexts remind us of, is we're always presenting ourselves. And so you have and we present differently in different places. So I have an avatar that I put on for church and another avatar that I put on at home. Most of us do. And a lot of times those avatars are pretty closely integrated with who we think of as our, you know, natural self or whatever. But in another sense, they're different personas, faces.
Sure. You write about Facebook, and you started a Facebook page for members of the clergy of the Evangelical Lutheran Church of America, ELCA.
Yes.
And it's interesting, you know, you invited a few dozen, and then you saw it grow. And as it grew, people decided what would they talk about and what would they not talk about on this Facebook page. And that was very interesting to have that conversation.
Yeah. Well, that was really a crazy event. I had been playing around with different kinds of technology within the Facebook platform for a while, and that was right at the time when they made the transition, which this is going to be like old now to some people, but they went from old groups to new groups. In old groups, you could only add people, and then they had to approve being added to a group, and then they would be in. And that structure, groups didn't get very large. And then they shifted to this new groups where any of your friends that you wanted to add to the group, you could. And so I just publicized to the people I added, which was, maybe 30 other clergy. And I was kind of strategic. You know, I picked like a friend in Seattle and a friend in D.C. and some friends in Minnesota and various places around the country and added them and then said, hey, why don't you add some of your colleagues? And it exploded. We had over 1,200 members in the group on the first day. And now there's 5,200 clergy in the ELCA clergy group, which is over half of the active clergy of our denomination.
Wow.
are in that Facebook group. And I didn't really know how we would use it, but I started realizing as it was growing, clearly at least among our clergy, there was real desire to connect. And some other ways of connecting maybe weren't as helpful to them or whatever. And so this pattern, this way of connecting, they found really, really helpful. Maybe it's partially the size and partially the, you know, national character of it, that it covers the whole. But like a really great example would be right now. I just posted a question yesterday in the group because I have this coming up, you know, in our season. I just asked, what does Lent do?
Simple question. I mean, simply put question.
Yeah, real simple.
Yeah.
And so far, there's 80 responses. And they're really, most of them are, many of them anyway, are short, but also equally thoughtful. Like, reminds us that we are hungry and cold, was what one pastor posted. Another pastor just posted one word, recalibrates. Hmm. And it's kind of cascading down. And I'm of a mind to ask permission of the group if I can just capture all those little phrases and then make a little poster that says, like, what does Lent do? And then, but it's also helping me prepare as a leader to lead us through the Lenten season again and help me remind me of some of the wider senses of what Lent does or means within Christian community. And everybody else who's reading that thread and participating in it is getting that same kind of learning, growth, challenge, whatever it is that's happening as you're in that conversation.
I don't want to put words in your mouth, but it sounds as though new media or transmedia times or whatever, however we would summarize this, can actually strengthen one, or at least help strengthen one's faith.
I think for sure. Obviously, there's the thing about media is that you can use it for
sure
a lot of different purposes. So like going back to Second Life, there are other kinds of communities in Second Life that I don't think it would be healthy to be a part of. Similarly, on Facebook, you could join a Facebook group that it could have an unhealthy character to it. But if you attend to how you're using that social media and it's in ways that build you up or build a community up in – this could be subjective, right? So we could end up in a debate about what counts as being, you know, building people up versus
right.
tearing them down or whatever. But at least from a Christian perspective, what builds up would be like strengthening bonds, cultivating conversation that's beautiful and healthy and all those kinds of things. And definitely, I would say that our group on Facebook does that. It people post prayer requests, and then if they're in a lot of pain, they'll see colleagues come in and really offer them a word of comfort. Or if something really tragic has happened in somebody's lives, they might even start organizing some kind of material assistance or help in that way. And our own church Facebook group is like that also. One of the most interesting things about groups on Facebook is you might think of them when you first form them as a kind of an old school broadcast medium. So you think like, oh, I started this group so that I can tell my members that we have an event on Thursday night that you should come to.
Right.
And you can use it for that. But the one what gets the most energy in the group is the stuff that's like personal and relational. Like, who do you recommend as an electrician? I'm new to Fayetteville, and you'll get like 15 responses. Or if a person at the university, one of our faculty members, we have a number of faculty at our church, gets a major award and somebody posts a link to the UARC website, you'll get like 40 likes.
Right.
Everybody's like, oh, you know. So yeah, it adds this kind of ambient thing to our act, to the you know, physical community that also gathers. It can be really upbuilding.
Well, tell me about Miroslav Tweedy.
Ah, yeah. Well, I was doing this. It started out as I was kind of connecting with Second Life in order to do some research for the book. And, you know, you kind of got to look around. There's a lot of different massively multiplayer online role-playing games that you can potentially get into and get involved in. Some of them have paywalls, so then it's a little like, are you going to commit the financial resources to play, like World of Warcraft or that Star Wars one that came out? Second Life is kind of nice in that, number one, it's not completely a game. It's more of like a Second Life, and you can play games in it if you go to certain portions, but it's free to just get in and mess around. And so that was a great starting place for me. So I created an avatar who is named after one of my favorite theologians, Miroslav Volf, and one of my favorite rock musicians, Jeff Tweedy. And I just, you know, put the two together and ended up with Miroslav Tweedy. And I really mostly go on at this point still to pray. So he has a monastic, kind of a long flowing old Catholic outfit. There's probably some fancy word. There's a word that's fancier than cassock for it probably, but I can't remember what it is. And it's cool because when you fly, you look like Keanu Reeves from The Matrix when he's
right,
flying around in
right.
his like black jacket, right? And so that's kind of fun and fitting somehow, I guess. And so I've just kept that. People really are – depends on who you are, but some of the builders in Second Life really can – they can like morph their clothes and do all kinds of neat things with their avatars and whatever. And I'm a much lower end user than that, you know. And there's a kind of a community there of people who are trying to host space for Christian community in Second Life. So there's like you can go to discussion groups, but you can even go to they're on a break right now, but there's a Lutheran pastor from Minnesota who would offer a weekly Bible study. He'd sit out on the beach with all these avatars.
That's in Second Life, yeah.
In Second Life, yeah. He had built kind of like a, you know, a beach house, and you go and you sit in the beach house, and there's a fire in the middle of it, and you're looking out over the ocean, and there's the sounds of the waves. And
really, I've never been to Second Life, so you're getting that audio as well.
Oh, everything. Yeah, yeah. It's a three-dimensional visual space, and you can set – whoever builds the space can set all of the kind of the ambient stuff. So there could be like background music, like you're walking through the mall, or mm-hmm. it could be – real ambient sounds in the sense of like what that environment looks like. You know, if there's a waterfall, then you'd hear a waterfall, or if there's a volcano, you'd hear periodic explosions in the background or whatever. You can build it however you want.
You mentioned Jeff Tweedy. You play something that predates any of most of what we've been talking about. You play the guitar, right?
Yeah.
Sometimes at your service?
Yeah, absolutely.
Because I saw recently you had a Facebook post. You were wondering on Facebook whether you should play the Lucinda Williams recording of Blessed or whether you should play it yourself.
Yep. And I ended up definitely covering it myself. Yeah. In that case, I integrated the song into the sermon. We have a great worship band. We have a lot of different kinds of music at our church. We've got a wonderful organist and
Bob Mueller.
Yeah. And he hosts and organizes a lot of great music for our what we call our traditional services. And then for our contemporary service, we've got this band does a great job. But then if I'm preparing a sermon, sometimes I'll also add some other stuff in. And that Lucinda Williams Blessed is just like an amazing reflection on who's blessed and how we're blessed by them. It's a great song.
Clint Schneckloth is the lead pastor at Good Shepherd Lutheran Church in Fayetteville and author of the new book, Mediating Faith, Faith Formation in a Transmedia Era. He'll talk about the book Saturday evening at 6 at Nightbird Books in Fayetteville. You can read more from him at his blog, lutheranconfessions.blogspot.com. He talked to Ozarks at Large's Kyle Kellums earlier this month.